This is HPR episode 2306 entitled HPR Community News for May 2017 and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 87 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is HPR volunteers talk about shows released and comments posted in May 2017.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hello everybody and welcome to Hacker Public Radio. My name is Dave Morris and with me tonight for the community news show for May 2017, I'm accompanied tonight by JWP. Hi JWP.
Hi Dave, how are you doing this fine evening?
I'm doing fine, thanks. It's warm here. I've got the back door open. I'm in the extension of my house, so you might hear seagulls and strange noises out the back, but there you go. That's a bit of ambience.
Okay.
So let's start with the welcoming our new hosts. We have two new hosts this past month, and they are The Dude, it's a cool name, and Nox. Okay, so let's go straight into looking at last month's shows, and there's not much to say about the show 2281, which was the last community news, which you very kindly helped out on, as did Christopher Hobbs. But we got a couple of comments on that show, and we had one from, now I'm hesitating how to say his name now, D-O-D-D Dummy, I think. That's just what Ken always said, so he's been right all along. He says, DODD Dummy is a play on the mainframe equivalent of Dev Null. In proper syntax of the DD, data descriptor JCL statement, comes from my friends trying to describe my prowess, which, so the command is, or the JCL statement is, do DD Dummy. So he's got some pronunciation here. So it's IBM JCL, basically, is what this comes from. So let's then I gave a comment to this saying, thanks for the explanation. Thanks, that helps to explain things. Just as an aside, in my day, JCL was a more generic term used on many of the mainframes that I used, which were ICL, CDC, and Burroughs. And at the university I worked at, we were wooed by IBM in the mid-1980s, who tried to sell us a machine to run VMCMS, I think. I forget what the machine was, so I actually have no experiences of IBM's JCL, happily.
Well, I happen to do a new show that's coming out this month about the Living Computer Museum in Seattle, and they have all of the old mainframes and VACs and everything, and you can get shell scripts for all those.
That sounds wonderful. Yeah, I'd love to see that. Where is that?
It's in Seattle. It's something Paul Allen did. It's called Living Computers, and you have to go to the web museum website and then ask for a shell account on the mainframes that you want to use, or the DAX VACs that you want to use, or I got an account on an old AT&T box.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. Oh. I must have a go at that. Very good. Okay, let's move on to the first show other than the community news. And this was 2282 Pathfinder Adventure Card Game, which was from Klaatu. Now, this is another one in his series of tabletop gaming. And he's talking about this particular game, the Pathfinder adventure game, and a few other subjects as well. It sounds quite advanced. It sounds like the sort of thing that would go right over my head, to be honest with you. you into this sort of stuff at all, John? Did you go away?
It had a dead space, but I really enjoyed Klaatu's show. It was quite in depth. This time he did it.
Yeah, this one was quite challenging to understand, I found, but still, it's the sort of thing that if you're into that sort of thing, you'd want, I'm sure, no doubt. Okay, let's go on to episode 2283, which is called Saving Money, Shaving with Double and Single Edge Safety Razors. And this is from a guy called Dave Yates, who I remember from many years ago. So
as soon as I heard that voice, I was like, oh, there's my man from South Carolina, Dave Yates, doing his thing. Golly, it's been a long time since I heard a podcast from him. It was really good to hear him again.
Yes, I used to listen to him a lot. Yeah, he's got very, very very recognizable voice, I think.
That's just a real smooth southern voice from America. I really enjoyed the show. I've gone back and forth between Safety Razors and Gillette for a long time, and it just seems that the Safety Razor sometimes just doesn't do as good a job as the modern one for me. But if I have time, the double edge or single edge safety.
Yeah, it's when I learned to shave as a young lad, my dad gave me a safety razor of the sort that Dave Yates was talking about, the sort where you put a single razor blade in. It was a double-edged one that he had, and you had a little dispenser that dispensed it into the razor. It just screwed together. I always wanted one of the fancy ones that you unscrewed and the top split open into two sort of doors into which you drop the blade. But I think they'd gone by the time I got to that. But so, yeah, it was good to hear about those sort of things. I just use an electric razor these days and find that those are less fuss, to be honest. But
I've been using Good News a little bit. But it was good to hear from Dave, and I hope he starts doing technical stuff again.
Yeah. No, this was an excellent show. It's an interesting subject to talk about, you know, because removing of hair is a human subject that everybody knows something about, I think. So yeah, this is cool. And a little bit of history as well about these particular types of razors. I enjoyed that very much. There was a bunch of comments on this one. Do you want to share these, John? I'll just do the first one, shall I?
Sure, just a second. Let me open the tab.
So I'll just be doing, we had one from Kuvmo, I think that's how you pronounce his handle, said, smooth show. Dave, back from the dead, like hearing from a long-lost friend. Great show. I use a little bottle of Shave Secret, and he gives a link to it. Just a couple of drops rubbed in, and you can do a full shave. Have a great week, he says.
Okay, so comment two was from DOD Dummy. Dave, the whole time I was wondering, glad to see you again, Dave. You made it just in time. I don't think I could have kept in between.
You're still there, John. You've full enough.
And that was posted on the 8th by Ron.
We lost you. We lost you there. We lost you between the first sentence of DODD Dummy and the end.
I can do it again. I can do it again. So comment two, it was posted on the May. Dave?
Yeah, go.
Okay, all right. So comment two, it was glad to see you again, Dave. You made it just in time. I don't think I kept it between the ditches much longer. The whole time I was wondering, how did you get the rest of the family to switch? I haven't shaved in 2 years, but Clarky Howard claims he reuses edge razors for months without nicking himself. And then there's a link.
Yeah, cool. So next one was from Rowan. Mechanical safety razors, he said. Great episode. Made the switch to a double blade safety razor myself about 2 years ago. Found a set in my local pharmacy for $20. Came with the handle stroke razor holder and about 20 blades. 2 months ago was the first time I had to purchase replacement blades. That's amazing. That's really good.
Quite the value for the money. The fourth post was by Frank, and he was said, welcome back to the Podsphere, Dave.
Jonas says, welcome back as well. Comment 5, glad to hear you on the audio waves again, Dave. While listening, I was wondering if you were going to say you got the rest of the family to switch. Sorry to hear no such luck. At least you're saving a third or fourth of the previous total. Personally, I trim rather than shave, so I haven't spent money on a razor in forever. I might start again after this show, though. I like the idea of the soap stick. I've not heard of that before. Sounds like it's worth a shot. I remember my grandfather had a double-ended safety razor. I'm not sure what happened to it. I'm sure his son picked it up after he passed away. Saving money on everyday things goes a long way in the yearly totals. Great show. Good to hear you back again. I'm looking forward to hearing more, techie or not. You going to do your own one there, John?
Sure, Dave. It's comment 6. It was by me. Dave, good to hear from you again on the airwaves. Great content.
Yeah, it's nice to hear him back. It really is. I used to listen to his show, and I found it taught me a lot. And the one thing that I remembered particularly, I went to the States. We took my kids to the California area in 2011, and because Dave Yates was always drinking Mountain Dew. I'd never heard of it before him. We had to buy some and check it out. We quite liked it, actually. just a personal anecdote there.
It's got more caffeine than coffee, Dave.
I know. I wouldn't want to drink it. You can get it here, but it's disgusting. So I'm glad I'm not drinking it anymore.
Yeah, so we keep cutting out, so I decided that I would start pinging www.google.com to see if it was my connection or what was going on, but we seem to be cutting out a lot.
Oh, no. Yeah, you're noticing me disappear from time to time, yeah?
Correct, or it could be me. My internet is, because it comes up from the basement sometimes, that through the power, I have the wall power connector thing, and so it sometimes turns itself off a little bit.
Okay. Well, I don't see any dropouts myself, but it's not easy to be certain. But there's nothing here that shows me I'm dropping out. So, okay. Well, it's a
strange thing, but normally if I just set my Pi to ping google.com, it doesn't happen.
Ah, right. Okay. So it sounds as if almost as something's timing out or something like that. That's bizarre.
That's what I think.
Okay, let's go on to 2284, resurrecting a dead Ethernet switch. This was Mirwi, who has an Ethernet switch which he identified had a failed capacitor. I don't remember how he worked it out. I think he'd already worked it out before he talked about fixing it. Had he? I can't honestly remember how he got there, but he did point out that it was distinctly distorted because that's what happens to electrolytics when they go funny.
Well, it was interesting for me that he had two that had the same thing. So he actually had two from the same manufacturer that broke the same way.
Yeah, I enjoyed listening to him actually doing the debugging. I obviously didn't write enough down about it because I've forgotten the details. It was very impressive what he did. The fact he had a scope to help him out was a significant step in the right direction, I thought. And he's put a quite an interesting picture in here, which is you can click on to see the detail of. And yeah, so having identified it and replacing it shouldn't be too difficult a problem. But you do need some reasonable equipment to detect it properly in the first place, I guess.
Yes, I don't think that just having a multimeter is going to work.
No, I'm interested because I got an Ethernet switch that they were going to throw out the university I used to work for. and it's something like a 24 port thing, but it doesn't work. And my debugging skills are not as good as these, so I'm not sure what's wrong with it yet. So anyway, it was very interesting.
Just think about how many pies you could have hooked to that, Dave.
Well, I know. I was going to run the house on it, you know. I mean, Ethernet everywhere. So we had a bunch of comments on this one. First one was from Crayon. Good job, Miri. If only all hardware was so easy to get into and repair, it says. Well, I do the next one. You can do the last one there, John. The second comment was from John Culp. It says, well done. I loved hearing this. I really like the real-time fixing a broken object part of it. But I would also like to hear more explanation of some of the stuff you were talking about with respect to measurements using the multimeter and analysis using oscilloscope. Great show.
Yeah, so, comment two was from a guy named Jonathan Culp, and he said, I love hearing this. It was really like fixing a real-time project. But I would like to hear more explanation of the stuff you were talking about with respect to measurements and using the multimeter and analysis on the oscilloscope. Great show.
You want to do yours as well?
I just did.
No, you didn't.
I did this number two.
You're not John
Culp. Okay. I just did John Culp. I guess you didn't hear me. Yeah. So, hardware really can last forever from me. All right. Yeah. So I guess that's the end of that show.
It is. We're having some communication issues here, I think, aren't we?
Just a little, but okay. I can actually see the ping on my end. On my end, stop. All right, so it's actually on my end a little bit.
When you're speaking, I can see the thing, the red lips that show up, and then they flicker and go black. Which I wonder if that's got. That's a symptom, I imagine. Anyway,
I'm not mumble propliant. But okay, so let's see.
We're on 2285, which is the tick conspiracy.
And this was from the new contributor.
This is from the dude. Yes. Sorry, I wasn't sure whether you were here or not, there, John. so he was talking. Go on.
I wonder if he's a big follower of the.
Maybe. Yeah. He was talking about the problems of ticks, and I imagine he lives somewhere rural, and he's talking about how if you go out into your backyard, then ticks can be everywhere, and they will get on your dogs, and they will get on you, and everything. So.
The Lyme disease is pretty bad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Dave. I was wondering if maybe from his title he's a big follower of the Big Lebowski.
No idea. Possibly so. He's I had not. See, I got a degree in biology, so I know a bit about ticks, but only from sort of undergraduate stuff.
I mean, I hunt, and in Germany they call it brucellosis, and in America they call it Rocky Mountain spotted fever. And I've had it three times, and so the doctor told me that next time I get it, I have to go to the hospital.
Ticks are vectors of a lot of nasty diseases, yeah. And the Lyme disease, as you mentioned already, is can be pretty bad. But it's not so common in the UK. I mean, I've been bitten by ticks on many occasions, but not to the extent that he's talking about. They're not approaching my house. They're all out in the woods and in the mountains and that type of thing. They're not encroaching on where I live. So I would not like the prospect of that.
Yeah, well, good overall, good show, and I hope that the dude does something else.
Yeah, it was fascinating. He really covered the subject well, actually. I found it most interesting, so I'd like to hear more. And he was very passionate about it, which is always interesting to hear. So, cool. So next
is the next one is HPR 2286, surviving a stroke,
and that's Tony Hughes, who is telling a personal story about how he had a stroke in February, And it sounded very severe from the way he was describing it. In my notes here, I wrote down he had a massive stroke. I think he might have used those terms, but he was with people who
Did I cut out again?
Oh, I think goodness. You must have disappeared for a second there, John.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I really feel for Tony. He was playing bridge with his wife, and all of a sudden, all those friends gathered around him and started pumping on his chest. It must have been pretty traumatic.
Absolutely, absolutely. But he was, you know, handled and dealt with, and emergency services called for him very quickly. So I'm sure that helped quite a lot, but still very, very frightening. But he seems to recovered it remarkably well. So that's quite amazing.
Yes.
So good luck, Tony. He's a great guy. Met him once or twice at Og Camp and stuff. You must have done the same, John. Have you met him? But
Well, I'm hoping that I can make it this year, and I hope Tony makes a trip after this stroke thing he had.
Yeah. There's a bunch of comments on this one. Clinton Roy says, fatigue. Thank you for this, Tony. Forgive me if I missed it, but do you expect to eventually get over the post-stroke fatigue? And shall I do the next one? Tony says in reply, hi, Clinton. Yes, the fatigue does gradually go away. It's different for everyone. With me, it's mainly gone now. But if I overdo it a couple of days in a row, I do feel it. I was warned it could last for up to 12 months, but thankfully that has largely not been the case. And I'm fitter now than I was before the stroke, having lost 22 pounds and started regular exercise by walking. So sounds good.
Yeah, and so comment three was by Jonas, and he said, great info. I appreciate you sharing your story. More people need to talk about the human side of hackers. I'll put you in the same group as Sigflup regarding...
You dropped out there. Regarding personal stories was the sentence. This is really appreciated. The more we talk about strokes, brain injury, you dropped out there, John.
I did. So schizophrenia, depression, and many others. I think the better we, the better we all will be. And I think it's important to know that we're not alone if we have difficulties along the way. Thanks again.
Yeah, it's a slightly harrowing story, but it's still a good one, and it's sounds like he's come through it, and things look good for the future. So, good luck there, Tony. So next one is 2287 desperately seeking saving RMS, and this is from Do DD Dummy or DODD Dummy, however he prefers it. And this is him talking.
I'm not sure. I always thought when he said DODD dummy that he worked for the Department of Defense or something.
I know. That's what started the conversation last time, wasn't it? Anyway, he was talking about trying to move more towards free software in a similar way to RMS's approach to IT and to the world. It's been more good intentions than actually getting too far as yet, I think is fair to say. But I'm sure he's going to press forward and follow up with this. So it was good. Yeah, it's a challenge, but I certainly applaud his attempt at trying.
Yeah, I really think that perhaps he might want to do the get like a MIPS. A MIPS laptop and give it a try. Something that doesn't have any blobs or anything. It might be an enjoyable experience.
Yeah. Well, good thought. There were two comments on this one. Brenda J. Butler was the first one. I was glad to hear your podcast about being a more conscientious free software user. I was very impressed to hear you started out alone without peers to talk to and help. Have you heard of VRMS? It's a Debian package, maybe available on other platforms, virtual RMS. It checks what you've installed on your machine and sends you a monthly email with a list of non-free software. So it could help with your goal of moving towards the free software ideal. I'm not all the way there myself, but I'm always trying to be more free. Read the tracking stroke EULA DMA stuff. If you're Android software, you can use the F-Droid repo instead of Google Play. It's all open source packages, and the installer will let you see the required permissions before you install. So even though it's all open source, it's not all desirable, and you do want to check the required permissions before you install. I find I'm limited in what I can install on my phone, but like you, I have a bit of patience.
Yes, and comment two was an answer by DODD Dummy. And he said, thanks for the tip. It was rough going for me in the early years without forums, chat rooms, but the hardest part was me being an idiot. I hadn't heard of virtual arms and will go give it a go. I'm now installing FSS approved distros, and I think I'll give each week, I'll give one each a week and choose one. It seems, Dave, that I really think that he should probably try one of those MIPS laptops from Lamote. Because he probably would get a really free FSF experience.
Yeah. I know that exists, and I've used MIPS hardware back in the day, but I wasn't quite clear that there were things to be had that are available now. You should do a show about that if nobody's ever talked about it. It's an interesting subject.
Well, I was going to do it. I talked to Ken, of all people, about it, and he was just like, John, why would you want to slow your life down? He said, just get the best hardware you possibly can afford and use that.
Yeah. I know. It's a difficult problem, isn't it? I try my hardest to do this as well. I mean, like, my son gave me a phone, a OnePlus One phone, which has got... what is it? A CyanogenMod derivative on it. So I can restrict to a fair degree what I put on it. But I still, you know, you can't go too far down that road before things don't work, or you can't interface with people and so on. You know, it's a difficult problem. But
exactly.
trying to do it is a good thing, though. So yeah. That's an interesting subject. I would like to know more, because I'd like to do more than I'm doing now. So let's move on to 2288, which is from...
Yeah.
You there?
It's
you okay?
From Knox. It's from Knox, and HPR 2288 is installing and using a virtual ENV wrapper for Python. Installing and using a virtual NVW wrapper for Python, what I learned the hard way. And To be honest, I'm not too sure about this, so I'll let you take
okay.
that over.
That's okay. I can't say I'm that knowledgeable about it, but this is from Knox, one of our new hosts, by the way, so it's good to recognize that. And I think this is Python's virtual environment thing, so you can actually install packages which don't require root access, if I understand correctly. There's a thing, because I tend to be more of a Perl user than Python, just because I'm too old to change and I used it a long time.
Of course, with the Perl handle inside the mumble room, yeah, I'd say you're pretty much a Perl user. Yeah,
I'm afraid so. But there's a thing called Perl Brew, which lets you do a similar thing, I think. But it doesn't seem to be as elegant as this. This allows you install a package, and then the package, there's virtual env and virtual env wrapper, and then you can use it by configuring your bash rc to source the script that you get, or the shell script that you get, and then you end up with a bunch of commands that you can use. So you can make a virtual environment and remove a virtual environment and so on and so forth. And then once you've got a virtual environment, you can then install things in it, as I understand it. So without needing privileges and so forth. And of course, it's also a great test area for checking something out before you use it for real, which sounds really good. He says, don't use sudo when installing inside the sudo, the virtual env, which is, you know, pretty much what I was trying to say there.
Yeah, it was a little confusing for me about the sudo part of it, but it worked out, it seems to work out really, really well for him. You want to move on to the comments?
Yeah, let's do that. I was quite fascinated with the thing. I must try it out at some point. Anyway, so we had the first one was from Droops, who said, great episode. Very technical and cool. Please keep them coming, which is a good comment.
Yes, and the second comment was from a Basis Opinion. More Python help, please. A longtime programmer trying to learn Python on my spare time. Very helpful, just what I needed. Like that you convey the information without an ego getting in the way.
So he's a good explainer. I think it's certainly the case. So yeah, more please, Knox. We had another one from Windigo who says, excellent advice. Virtual End was something I didn't get into until later into my learning, and it made things much nicer to work with. Thanks for bringing attention to it. Don't tell Ken or Dave, but I'll look into doing some Django shows. So we heard you. We want some Django shows now, please. So that's good. Right. I'm hesitating between
okay,
shows because...
So the HPR 2289, Cindy, tell if your email has been read. And it's hosted by...
You just fell off the world again there, John, I think. You said it's hosted by, and that the answer was Sigflub.
Dave, it's working again. Yeah, cut out again. So it's HPR. It's HPR 2289. Cindy, tell me if your email has been read. And it's by a guy named Sigflub.
This is a lady called Sigflub, who's also
here. I'm looking at the picture. She's got short hair.
She has
got some short hair. Okay, I'm sorry, Sigflub. You got short hair.
So, yeah. Now, this is a tool which will... It's a thing people have been doing sort of surreptitiously in some ways. You know, some of the HTML email that you receive has got... like a single pixel GIF or something like that in it, which if you view it in your email reader will make a call to that GIF, which can then be detected as being the... I think she's actually tailored these so that you can go to her site and get the token, effectively, put it into your email, and then when you send it to somebody and they read it, it notifies, because it's requesting a specific URL with a key in it, it will notify her server. You can go back and ask if it's been read. So that's quite cool.
The way that you defeat this is that you tell your Hotmail web browser thing that you don't want to read it in HTML, you want to read it in text.
Well, yeah. When I discovered this, which is some time ago now, because I was actually looking after email for a while, and then, thank goodness, hired somebody who did it for me. But university level email is huge, because it's a nightmare. But that was a thing we spotted quite early on, and we took action and warned people about this, and I certainly switched off HTML capability in my email client for many, many years. So, but still, it's still an interesting technique. So we have a comment from Joe, who says, "Hacker, just what? Calling out that some email clients allow you to block HTML emails to go out and fetch resources like images, unless you explicitly allow downloads from that specific email address or domain. It's a great security feature. People who use it will be able to read your email without you knowing, unless they mark you as trusted and allow the client to download resources." So, yeah, that, I guess that's pretty much what I was just saying, isn't it? You should have read the comment first.
Yeah. So it's a very interesting thing. The next show was from Ken.
Just taking a slurp of tea there. Right, yes, Ken's show was how to change the height of your ironing board. Amazing life hack. It will change your life forever.
Yeah, it's a...
You have to listen to that.
Did you see the picture? He's got this picture there. I think I wrote him a mail or put a comment on here or something about it. Anyway, it was a very interesting show, especially for the picture.
Yes. No, so it's good to see how people solve problems, I think, isn't it? Yeah. So basically what Ken's doing is he's got an ironing board which has legs that can be positioned at different positions, and each one raises the board up a bit, except that it doesn't go quite high enough. So the hooks into which the legs drop in order to do this, he added another one. It's basically what he did. And so therefore he can make it high. He did point out that it makes it a little less stable, because the higher it goes, the closer the legs are together. So yeah, it's but there you go.
Yeah.
Saved you back. So I was going to say something about this. I made a note. My mother had what was probably the best ironing board ever. It incorporated a seat. So as you stood it up, there was a seat attached to it that you could sit on. So sitting down to iron is cool.
I wish I had one.
Yeah.
I wish that I had one of those. All the years I was in the Army, especially my poor wife, man, that would have been fantastic if she had like a little bench, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Standing up to iron, especially when you're tall and you've got a long way to bend over, is a nightmare. It's horrible. The other solution I found is to buy sort of as many walking style clothes as I can, because they're made to be easily washed and just hung up, and then you don't need to iron them. So that's my solution. But that's the lazy man's solution. So do you want to read your comment there, John?
Sure. It's pure love. You have no minions for that process, and his subjects gathered around him like the leaves on a tree, and then the smiley face.
Yes. I think Ken's the minion.
I think he's got. How many girls does he have living with him?
I've forgotten. Is it two daughters he has and a son? I think it's two. Yeah, two daughters. Yeah. Did I say at the start of the show that Ken is mysteriously AWOL today? We were assuming he was going to be with us, but we never heard from him.
It would have been really great because I keep cutting out, but that he'd be here. But but it's still 2290 is still a show, man. We got a show that day, and it was a pretty good show with great artwork.
No, absolutely. There's nothing. No. There's no criticism intended at all. I think it's a great thing. I think we should have more like that. So little solutions that make life easy. That is the essence of hacking. I think anyway. So let's press on to show 2291. Arch on Celes. Celes, it turns out, is the name of Hannah of Terror of Souls Chromebook. So that puzzled me for a little while.
It was really hard for me to grasp, really. So she has a Chromebook, and a Chromebook has to be the hardest thing to hack in the world. Because you have to go in, not only the BIOS, you have to change something. Whereas if you get a Windows budget thing, you just have to change the UEFI and boom, you're in.
Yeah. Although I know a number of people who have bought Chromebooks and have hacked them because they reckon they're really nice, lightweight, portable devices, you know, and well powerful enough to do what they need to do. So, you know, it's a good thing to do. And she's put Arch on it, and I did not know. I don't know much about Chromebooks. I was amazed that you have to remove a hardware write protect screw. This thing is locked down as hard as possible. I mean,
yeah. See, that's always the scary part for me, is when I have to break open the case, and then I have to do the thing with the screw.
Yeah.
And that terrifies me, of course. And yeah. I've never really done that. I've never really done that. And me and Ken, we tried to get the Core Boot guys to do one of his PCs, and they keep on saying we have to go to a hackerspace and learn how to do it ourselves, and they won't do it at the moment. So we're both terrified to death doing something like this.
No, I have great sympathy with that. I don't think I would do that. But all respect to anybody who does, and to Hannah of Terror of Soul
she's got
for doing this.
Great show notes.
Yeah.
Great show notes here too.
Absolutely, absolutely. These are great. I process the notes so I see them early, and these are very impressive. I thought there's a lot of dense information in there that it's going to be useful for anybody who wants to do this. There were no comments on this one, so that was the sound of me scrolling down there. Okay, we'll go on to the next show.
So the next one is 2292, a Bofuring UV5R UHF, VHF/UHF headset part one, hosted by Mr. X.
Yes. Now, he's done a block of shows on this, which he's spread out sort of one a week or one every couple of weeks way out into the future, for which we obviously thank him enormously. And he's got this little handheld transceiver, I guess it is. Is it? It's a radio that does UHF and VHF. And he's sort of going through it in minute detail, describing it, which I thought, this is going to go right off my head. It's not for me, but I find it really interesting. He has a way of describing things very well, I think. And this was good. I enjoyed this, and the later ones, which I think we're going to get to, aren't we? Yeah, there's more. There's two more to come.
Well, I think he does one a week now, which is great. Also the audio quality on these shows isn't too bad. It's too bad at all. He seems to have a pretty good audio quality there.
Yeah.
And so there were two comments. So Dave, you wrote a strange urge to make a show. I had a terrible urge to make another HPR show after listening to this. 2203. Great show, by the way. I feel I might have an inkling about amateur radio is all about after listening to this series. And then the next comment is from Mr. X,
who replies, "Hi, Dave. Sorry for the long delay in replying to this. I'm terrible at checking for comments. Many thanks for the kind words. Glad you enjoyed it." My comment about strangers to make a show is because he does a sort of subliminal message at the end that you're going to do another, you're going to make a show for HBO, which I thought was wonderful. It's really nicely done and also quite funny too. And it made me make a show. Did you hear a noise there? Because I've got things that are noisy in the background.
Okay, Dave, I'm back. And it looks like the next show is about your basket thing. Dave, I'm
sorry.
It was
my fault. I had a problem I needed to solve, so I went quiet for a minute. Yes.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
So now we're on more supplementary bash tips expansion part 2 of 2.
So this one is me trying to finish off what I started talking about. Parameter expansion and file name expansion and all of that good stuff, which is all covered in the bash manual, but is quite impenetrable. And so I thought I'd work my way through it and understand it and explain what I understood along the way. And this is the last bit about some quite complicated stuff.
I was getting ready to say, Dave, it was pretty tough for me. Hey, can we take a 60-second timeout?
Yeah, sure. This will go on record, but it doesn't matter. We put the audio through a truncation of blanks of, silence truncate. So we don't need to worry too much about silence anyway. So go for it.
Okay. So I'll be back in 60 seconds.
Okay.
All right, Dave, I'm back, man.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm back. I'm back. Dave, boy, this is a pretty impressive list of shows that you've got here. I think you need to take my OPI exam for me, man. We'll just swap IDs or something.
Yeah, I know. Some people are saying, God, this man talks too much. Skip this one. Another one from that guy. Anyway, this was
actually,
about...
Actually, you got some comments. Well, SCP is one of the things that I like to use, but I don't really understand that well. But let me go ahead and read it. So Jonathan Culp, who's commented several times this month, said, what about with SCP? Hi, Dave. This was a really great, excellent show. Just the kind of stuff I wish I'd known about for the last 10 years. I tried something after listening that worked wonderfully as long as I was doing the list command. But when I tried the same thing using secure copy to get the same arguments, it didn't work. What I wanted to do was push all the MP3 and AUG files to a given directory over to my server in a single command, excluding the HTML markdown files in the same directory. The following command worked perfectly to asterisk, asterisk, list, asterisk, asterisk, all of the MP3 and AUGs, ls, asterisk.
I think you dropped off again. that expression was too much.
I tried the same. I must have cut out again.
You cut out the nasty bit, but I think you could skip over that anyway.
Yeah, it was a pretty long one, and then you replied, "Hi." Oh, you do your own response, Dave.
Yes, I said SCP is a bit weird. John was saying that he could use one of these extended expressions with ls, and it worked perfectly just to select out particular files from a set of files. But when he tried to use it with SCP, it didn't work with secure copy. So I said, glad you enjoyed the show. To look into this, I did the usual thing of creating a directory SCP test and making files in it. And I'm not going to read this all out because I went into quite a lot of detail trying to answer this question, but basically saying that I found exactly what he found, and I found difficulty in copying stuff using these extended expressions. So I found a solution, but it's really complicated, and I don't even, at that point, I didn't even know I understood it.
It's the longest reply ever.
It's a show
in and of itself, Dave.
So let me just, even my summary is long, but I pointed him at a site to try, but I don't think he did because it looked really, really unpleasant. So so anyway, I then followed it with a further comment, and I tried some further stuff, and I didn't use the extended expression that this show is about, which John had failed with. I used a simpler expression, and it worked fine. And then I explained that, and then John came back with an answer. Shall I read that as well?
Sure, Dave.
Yes, Jonathan Culp came back and said, "Details, details. Aha! As always, the devil is in the details. The last comment you left gave me the hint I needed. I was putting the asterisk in the wrong place and also using the parentheses instead of curly braces. The following command works just like I want." And he shows a thing using brace expansion. So he did manage to solve his problem. Well, we did it between us, I guess. And so he was happy.
Yes. So the next show is HPR 2294, Activities with a Toddler.
Well, hold on a second.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
We'd only got as far as five. So I'm not going to read all of these things, but basically I said there's many ways of achieving this, but glad it helped. But I have started putting together a brief show about this subject because it's quite complex and it needs a show rather than comments. And John came back and said, well, good, or something to that effect. And then we had a comment from Clacky, who said he had no idea that SCP would do brace expansion, and he basically noticed that there were issues with this stuff with rsync as well, and so he's basically pointing out that SCP and rsync and various things that try and do clever stuff across SSH tunnels a bit broken, or they're not as well implemented as they could be. And I answered that finally, this is the last one, you'll be pleased to know, saying yes, I tried this and I hit problems, and there's a show coming which will try and discover this. I keep saying brief. This show will be brief, but it won't. It will be very long. So It's generated the SCP, issue.
Yeah, the SCP, Dave, at least in the beginning of it, talk about SCP and like the basics before we go into that really long stuff. So at least the first five or six minutes is common use of the SCP, so everybody knows what SCP is.
Yes, that is needed. I have to agree. So let's push on to the next show, 2294. Did you want to speak about that? I assume you've fallen off.
Can you hear me? Am I still there?
I can hear you now. Yeah. 2294, activities with a toddler. This is Shane Shannon.
It says that he's got a list of 11 things, and I really like the cat video one.
Yes. There's some great things here. I really like this. It's an issue. It is a thing. As a parent, you do have a lot of problems coming up with interesting ideas of things to do. So having a list that you can go and think, oh, I did this before. I can try that one. It's good. Yeah, cat video is a good one. So there were a bunch of comments on this one. We had, okay, John?
Let me go ahead and take the one from Wendigo.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so comment one was from Wendigo. It says, timely, I've got a daughter on the way, so advice from those in the trenches is always appreciated. Comment two was by DODD Dummy. Nice show. For what it's worth, I smiled through most of the show. And then comment three was by you, Dave. You can go ahead and read your own.
I said, this was great. I love this. It brought back such memories. For what it's worth, we collected loads of craftable stuff when my two kids were small. I found a large box of it in the attic when untidying last year. Stuff like egg cartons, cardboard tubes, cardboard boxes, etc., sticks, straws, etc. You get the idea. Play was with all of these, and PVA glue, sticky tape, and sometimes paint. You can bet that all manner of fantastic structures were built. So, yeah, I sympathize with his list, and my list was to go and get this box of stuff out, and we'd make stuff out of junk.
Yeah, and then we had comment four from Jonathan Culp, and he says, ride the bus. What an excellent show. What I liked best was what I could hear you smiling when you talked about doing certain things with your daughter. This is great. One thing I should do with my kids when...
Oops, you've gone away again. One thing I used to like to do with my kids when they were that age was to take them riding on the city
from Barnes
bus.
And Noble.
You fell off that one again, John.
Ah, okay. So
I was just filling in for you.
Ah, so Jonathan Culp, so he took his daughter to the Barnes & Noble. I don't even know if there's still a Barnes & Noble anymore. Having a destination like that, they liked really getting on the ride the bus, and it was great fun for them at that age.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a good idea.
And then Clarky, how do you say it?
He pronounced C-C-L-A-T-K. It Clarky. He's Swedish, so he...
Clarky?
Swedish?
Beautiful episode. Tickling, love to hear the clearly audible across a microphone speaker, the internet, and my speaker. He liked it a lot, too. Great show.
Yes,
thanks
absolutely.
For doing that, bro.
Yeah. It's that was definitely a dad who really enjoyed having quality time with his daughter, and it came across, and that was very cool. So MX Linux 2295 from Tony Hughes is next. So Tony's sending
really
in some good shows.
I really like this one, Dave. Tony's got a lot of stuff. He redoes laptops like I do a lot, and I can't believe he took Mint 17.3 off and did this though. But it's okay. So he talks about this. I always thought that this was sort of like from the anti-X people, or the Memphis people. I always thought that this project was from them.
Yeah, I don't know much about it. To be honest, it sounded interesting from Tony's description of it, but. Yeah, I think I looked at Mepis once, didn't take to it, but I didn't have a need to have a very lightweight OS. So, yeah, it sounds good. XFCE it's got, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, with Tony using the older thing, it's I think made is probably as high as you.
Yeah. It's quite understandable that he'd want to do that because that some of these machines are going to struggle with anything very much more. So, yeah, very good. I enjoyed this. And as always, Tony makes some great notes. So thanks for that.
Yeah. And I had a comment. He always finds something new to talk about. And I even asked him about the Memphis project, if it was part of Memphis. So it has a feel of Memphis to me.
Yeah. I don't know much about these, so I go by your judgment there. So next we've got Mr. X again with the second installment of his Bofeng, he calls it. I'm not sure how I would say that. This handset. And he's talking this time about, well, he's going through the various features, talking about VHF and UHF and all of this sort of stuff with loads of really interesting links to follow up. I've looked at one or two, but not in huge depth yet.
Well, it's so important, the notes, especially with that. So this is like, I didn't know what UHF, much about UHF, and so I had to, he put the wiki right there. And he's got the 2 meter band on it and stuff. And unfortunately, when I pull out my shortwave, used to be a shortwave listener because it used to be back in Germany. There was no English. And so I did the scan the other night, and there's not very many shortwave stations left.
Oh, that's a shame. Yeah, I used to listen to shortwave a lot years ago on a Valve radio. But yeah, still. No, this is good. This is good. There's tons and tons of information here, and he's worked really hard to put this all together. So thanks so much for that. That's quite a desirable machine, in fact. So no comments on this one. So let's move on.
Okay. So Dave, you did the HBR 2297.
This is us being DJs. Yay. This is Andrew, who's also called McNallu, who does another podcast and has done a few things on HPR over the years. You've met you've met Andrew. I know you've met him.
Have I?
Yeah, he was at Og Camp. You were at the last Og Camp, yeah, weren't you? So
it's 2 years ago. They didn't have one last year, right?
And that's right. Yeah, so Andrew was there.
Okay.
He was on the HBR table with us. I went over to Andrew's house. He invited me over, and we sat down in the living room there, and we were listening to these tracks and talking about them as we went along. And it was just us being DJs and talking about some of the stuff that we like from Magnitude, which we've done before, but hopefully people found it interesting.
I like that the links were there, so I could just when I like the song, I could go and click on it and get it.
Indeed, yeah. It's Magnitude's good because you can listen to it. The only slight downside is because if you're not a member, you hear it with some advertising in it. But you can still sample. We are able to put the tracks in without advertising because we're both members, and they allow that. You can put it into a non-commercial podcast, so that's quite good. It was fun. It was a good thing to do.
And we got comments on the show from Jonas.
Yeah. Okay. You want to do that one?
So yes, sure. So it was in bold. Great listen. Thanks so much for the alternate music picks from Magnitude. I always thought it was more classical music since that was the origin. I definitely appreciate hearing thought on different music. I like most of the Gurney in the show. P.S. I nearly fell out of my chair when I was listening.
The text-to-speech, I think, is what that is. And he's commenting on the fact that it said explicit after my name. So it's making a joke that this was apparently an explicit
playlist
show.
Yeah. So did you say something there?
Yeah, I did. You disappeared. So I filled in for you there. So sorry about that. Yeah, I was just saying that he was making a bit of a joke, the fact that it had an explicit tag on it. But my comment was, thanks for the feedback. Glad you liked the show. We had fun making it since we were in the same room and actually listened to the tracks in real time I mark all my shows explicit since it means stated clearly and in detail, leaving no room for confusion or doubt. And that's what I aim for. They aren't meant to be offensive, though, unless you hate detail. Smiley face. So I'm just making a point on this explicit nonsense, because explicit doesn't mean offensive or rude. It means something completely different. And why the hell we have to call things explicit when they're, you know, when we want to say we've said a rude word in here is ridiculous, and it offends me. So that's why I call all of my shows explicit.
Yeah, so I even sometimes just do it just in case I have a darn or a damn in there, you know.
Yes. Well, who's to say a thing is offensive? I mean, I might say a word like apple, and this is deeply offensive to anti-Appleists, you know. I mean, or banana or something, you know. It's such a ridiculous thing.
Yeah, but then you have folks like Dave Yates, 6 or 7 years ago, when his two daughters were small, and he was listening to podcasts, and they go to church and stuff. So yeah, the explicit would be helpful for folks that are religious. Yeah.
No, I don't object to the idea of there being a message that says you might not want your children to hear this, or this might contain adult language. But the word explicit does not mean what it's used to mean. It's a pedantic point, I know, but it's still, I dislike the fact that English is being warped in this way to mean things that it's not really supposed to. Anyway, I could rant on this as well. I don't normally talk about it. So let's move on to 2298, shall we? Phantom power drain.
Sure, the phantom power drain. Diagnosing a phantom power drain on an automobile. It's a scary topic.
This is Brian, who done a show on clay and pottery and stuff in the past, and he is talking about debugging a problem on a car or automobile, as he would say. And he's giving some useful hints about how to deal with this using a multimeter and stuff. There's a comment below which. Not much point in reading, but he made a mistake. He put millivolts in the
mini
thing,
volts and I changed instead of milliamps.
Yeah, milliamps. As the editor, I changed it to milliamps, but I made it obvious that it had been changed since there was a comment about it.
Then Jonas wrote, "I didn't know that. Great info. I didn't realize you could shoot. You could troubleshoot using such a small instrument. My truck is getting older and may need this." Info eventually, thanks for the show.
Now this is what it's all about. Having a sharing bits of expertise like this is cool. So yeah, interesting.
Exactly.
So next we have 2299. What's in my bag from Shane Shannon again? So thanks, Shane, for two shows. Is it two shows this month? That's fantastic. So this is one of the what's in my toolkit type things, and he's talking about the five items in the bag he takes to his job, and he's a computer instructor, and he has a list of things: flashlight, flash drive, set of picture dice, small notebook, and a cell phone in this bag. So yeah, cool. It was an interesting collection. I liked he had a Star Wars USB stick. That was good. And the story dice are to help give students ideas for writing stuff. So, and he's a believer in paper notebooks, which I quite like.
Yeah, I like that he always had a little bag with him in this, and that he still uses paper and stuff.
Yeah, he's using bullet journal type of style of thing, which is another topic that we could do with hearing more about, actually, because organizing your thoughts and ideas and your to-do list and that sort of stuff using a physical notebook is something that could be talked about. It's a cool thing people are doing at the moment, but it's also, you know, a good skill to have. So, yeah, interesting show.
Dave, believe it or not, I sort of moved back to it. I get sponsored by SUSE and Red Hat a lot, and they always give me these moleskins, these brand new moleskins, and so
Ooh,
I just
very nice.
Use them a lot.
Very nice. Yeah. Well, I'm a great believer in using paper and pens and this sort of stuff. You know, I use the technical stuff as well, but I just like paper and just like the feel of writing implements and paper. So, yeah, cool stuff. So you were next, 2300, the first Intel CompuStick. Tell us about it then, John.
Well, I was a little disappointed with some of the comment with the sound quality in it, Dave. I bought a brand new Plutronics headset, and I was trying to get it to not have so much echo in it when I talked, or I wanted it to be sound a little cleaner. But with that limuxumcom.au blogspot.com that kernel, I was able to get that Intel stick working much better.
Yeah. That was a good find, wasn't it? It sounds in principle quite a good device, but wasn't quite as good until you found a way to make it better. So good for you. Sounds cool, actually. Sounds like a cool device. The sound quality thing.
Yeah, so it's a great little piece of hardware.
It sounds it could have done with a picture, mind you. But who am I to?
Don't know how that picture comes. Sometimes that picture comes. I don't know how that happens with my Asetta there. I don't know. I really want an Asetta, either that or a Morris Minor, but I can't ever seem to afford one.
I think what it is you have a Gravatar. Is that your Gravatar? Have you set that up at some point? Or did you send us a picture of your Asetta?
I think I think it might have been my Gravatar from somewhere.
I think Ken's got a thing that goes and scans Gravatar every so often, not very often, but and then he copies the images and puts them on the HBR server. So I've done it myself a few times, but it's good. My auntie had one of those Isetis, auntie and uncle, the two of them packed in there was quite a sight.
The front door just opens.
Yeah, with the steering wheel on it. Is that the one? The steering wheel come out with the door.
Exactly. No, yeah. I don't remember if the steering wheel came out with the door or not, but I went to an Asetta convention one time, and it all happens right there in the front, right in front of the car. There's no going to the back or anything.
Yeah. It's great technology. It's amazing. And is it like a two-stroke engine or something in there? I think it is, isn't it?
It's a two-cylinder engine.
Is it? All right. So is it a four-stroke or a two-stroke? Do you know?
I think they have some models that came with a moped engine in them.
That would be the one I'm thinking of.
Legal moped engine in Germany.
Yeah.
So that was a two cycle motor, and the thing about it is in Germany at the time, to get a driver's license, it was a little costly for some people.
Uh huh. Yeah. It's that's the main reason people you went for these in my time, the fact that you could drive them on a motorcycle license. So that's cool,
Dave. It's definitely a cool topic. I broke up again, but I'll do a show about this in a
that would be Asetta, interesting. Yeah, that would be very interesting. I filled in for you while you fell off there, because I do know a little tiny bit about these things, and they're very good fun.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, Dave, in Germany, it was important back then because the moped license is much cheaper than the car license.
Yeah. It was the same in the UK. Exactly the same. So let's move on to 2301, shall we? And that's Mr. X again with his third show of the month about the Bofeng. Now, this one... I'm just looking at my notes here. He was talking about frequency and wavelength. Now, that I sort of know this, but I thought his explanation was great, and it helped me to understand it better, actually. So it was good. I enjoyed that. He said it was a rambling podcast. I thought it was actually very good. I like the start.
Actually,
I like the rambling start.
He had to go from notes, I thought. It was so detailed. It really, really... I think he had to have some notes somehow.
Well, I don't. Yeah. But he's still got a great style, and whether he's going from bullet points or something, but he's a good explainer. He's a good, has a sort of teaching style about him that's great. And I really liked the story about how Mainsham frequency time stamping was a way of fingerprinting bits of audio. You could tell when and where it was, I think, from the mains hum. That's mind-boggling. I must look into that more.
I like the info about the multi omnidirectional antenna.
Yeah, that was also interesting. Yes, it was a real gem, that one. I enjoyed that one a lot. So yes, okay, no comments, but we certainly liked it. So that's good. I'm sure there are a lot of the radio guys who are appreciating this, to be honest.
Okay, I'm back. So there looks to be no comments, Dave.
There are no comments, no. Let's move on. And is that Dave Morris guy again doing more boring shows? This one was me trying to... I just had an idea, right? I'd been doing these shows on weird bash things, and thinking, oh yeah, it's interesting, but I'd never use it. And then I came across a need to use one, so I thought I'd do a show on it. So I managed to put this one together quite quickly, and this was the result. So this is I'm calling it Bash Snippet, in the hopes I can put together other short shows on bash things. And
well, I liked it, Dave, because I could rewind it and play it again, and so I could get it the second time, because a lot of times I'm going 140 or 150 kilometers on the Autobahn, and in the 7-minute show I can always press the back show, but if it's a 45-minute show I can't press the back button.
yeah, I shall try and do others that are short if I can, but usually I've got too much to say. This is the trouble. Anyway, so were there comments on this one? Yes, we had a comment and a reply from me. Klacke says, thanks. I've written a few scripts in my day that do something like first putting a glob in parentheses, then double checking whether the array is longer than one. And if it's length one, check that the thing is a thing and not just the wildcard. Should have used null glob next time, I will. And I said to that, glad you found it useful. Yes, I'm going to use null glob in scripts now for sure. There may be side effects in other parts of a script, I'm not sure, so I'll turn it off once I've finished with it. So, I think it's good. I shall definitely use it. I think I just said that, didn't I? So, yeah.
Yeah, you're definitely doing...
Sure, I hope that was a compliment, but I never heard the end of it. John, your internet is really crappy tonight, which is a shame. We're surviving, though, I think. We're surviving.
Yeah, Dave, so you're going to do my LPI for me for sure next time.
yeah. I must give that a try one time. So last show for the month was Geddes 2303, KDN Live Part 5, all about audio. He's talking about KDN Live and recording audio for when you're making videos or whatever. So, yeah, he reads these really well. The original material is brilliant. Go on, John.
I'm sorry, Des. So what I liked was that he talked about how to mix, right? And so how he sometimes you want like cafe sounds and the track part of it and stuff. And it looks like this just takes Audacity to the next level.
Absolutely. No, this revealed a whole bunch of things I was just not aware of. So it's great from that point of view. It's even though I may never use them, it's still great to know. It's always good to know more about stuff, I think. So, yeah, very cool.
Any idea about the hardware requirements to have a KDE in live setup?
I don't know. I think it might have been covered a little bit at the beginning of this series. I think something reasonably beefy is called for, but don't quote me on that. I really don't know.
Okay, well, this was a good show. I really enjoyed it because I really am interested in audio quality, and so it popped up on me an awful lot.
Yeah, Yeah, no, this is a good one. It's I think there's one more to go, and the series is done. But yeah, it's been most interesting. So we'll stop there. We've got a whole bunch of comments relating to previous episodes, which we need to go and check out. And that will take me a few minutes to, or seconds anyway, to get to the details, I think. So there was a comment on episode 2168, Analog Random Number Generator, which was Klaatu talking about ways of coming up with random numbers without using electronics. And we had a comment from RTSN who said, "Hi, Klaatu. This was a fun and weird episode. Just wanted to check if you've seen this," and he refers to a blog. "Couldn't help to think about you and this HBR episode while reading it." So I haven't looked at this link, but it looks like it could be interesting.
Yeah, Dave, I don't know where to go to look at the additional notes from April.
Well, what I'm doing, and I should have done this before and I never remember, is to click on these various links and open up tabs so I can check out the comments. So what I'm doing is I'm looking at the show notes for this episode where it says comments this month. There are 8 which relate to previous shows at the top of the list. So I'll just go through these, shall I, and come back to it at the end.
Yes, please.
If you catch up with me, then feel free to join in. But I'll just try and wing it. Ken's always better at this than I am. I don't know. I think my brain's getting too old to handle this well. So we're talking about, and I think I just took my finger off push to talk. Sorry about that. We're talking about episode 2249, HPR New Year Show, episode 3. And we're looking at comment number 5. And this was from Frank, who says, "Windows on top. Windows actually supports the always on top function." Well, I remember this discussion. It just has no GUI means of activating it. But some programs use it, most prominently media players. There are third-party tools which make it available globally, such as ActiveAid, written by the staff of German computer magazine C'T. No idea how you pronounce that. A quick English installation guide is at, and there's a link. ActiveAid also brings other Linux goodies, such as drag a window with Alt plus LMB. And Ethan Williams says, "Thank you." I think I might have just done a comment that wasn't made last month. Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem, Dave. No problem.
Show 2263 is Freak Does Geek, which is the two guys traveling along on the bus and having an interesting chat. And RTSN says, "Great episode. Thanks for a really interesting and enjoyable episode. I think it's healthy and important to question and consider concepts we to some extent take for granted, like how visual perception shapes our worldview. Look forward to hearing more from you two." So that's a good comment, and I really agree with that. That was a good show, actually. I enjoyed that. So next was 2266. Gone. What is it, John?
I thought that was an excellent comment.
Yes, absolutely. We're looking now at 2266, Game Books Lone Wolf. It's one of Klaatu's tabletop gaming shows. And we're looking at Shane Shannon made a comment. "Intriguing. Thank you very much. Thank you very..." Oh, he probably missed the much. "For the great show and the link to the free books." That comment thing is really hard to use. It's easy to make typos in it and not be able to go back and fix them. So to do that myself. Having problems opening the pages. Something's not behaving as it should here.
Dave, I can't hear you.
No, I was just trying to follow a comment and I'm getting error messages. Something's not loading as it should. I don't seem to be able to connect to HPR at the moment.
And I'm having trouble connecting to Google.com. It's not paraphrasing for me anymore. Dave?
Yeah, sorry. I'm a bit distracted here because somehow or other there's an invalid URL has crept in here. Yeah, I got it. Somehow the link was to show 2267 was to something called hobbypublicradio.com. I didn't know we had a .com address at all. I just tried and that didn't work. So I just changed it to hackerpublicradio.org and I'm getting it. But basically, this
most unusual, but sometimes my company doesn't take hackerpublicradio.org though.
Yes, so. Yes. There was an alias. There should be an alias for Hobby Public Radio to get around that, but I don't know quite why it's not responding. Anyway, this was RTSN commenting on Sigplup's show, Our Digital Art, and basically saying, good episode. Wonderful to see more art-related episodes in HPR. So that was hard work to get that one. Sorry about that, everybody. Yeah, it's that Hobby Public Radio link that's messing things up. So, right, now we're looking at 2269, comment 4, Chocolate Milk, the show is called. And comment 4 is from DODD Dummy, who was asking a question earlier on about was this show a syndicated show? And Ken pointed out the current syndication rules, and DODD Dummy came back and said, okay, got it, makes sense. So that was it. Two more to go. 2271, comment number 2. So yeah, this is a show from Tony Hughes, Raspberry Pi 0W, and there's a comment from Tony in reply to Droops's comment number 1, where Droops was excited about the prospect of using a Pi 0W, and Tony says you'll be lucky to be able to get hold of these for teaching a class, which is what Droops was thinking of doing, because you can only order them one at a time. I've got a feeling we've covered some of these. Did we cover these last week? I can't remember. When a comment sort of overlaps the list, we do them regardless. But remembering which ones they were can be difficult, at least for me.
I don't think so, Dave.
No, I don't know. Because I look after the comments, I can't remember which ones we've seen and which ones not. So the last one was Only Half the Time, who did an excellent show about having problems with the server, installing Hyper-V, and finding out that he had the wrong sort of RAID. Somebody set up the wrong sort of RAID on the disks. And Mirwi sent in a comment, entertaining. I'm sure you know, but you have a great voice. You can read out the phone book to us, and I'll enjoy listening. Thanks for the show, Michael.
That particular show, Dave, was probably one of my top 5 ever Hacker Public Radio shows.
It was a real gem. I hope we get some more from him because he really has a skill.
Him and the Model Rocket guy, I should get together because I was really addicted to that. I actually saved that Model Rocket one on my iPhone and listened to it when I need relative calm.
yeah. And what better plaudit can you have than that? That's brilliant. Right. What we now do, you can't go yet. Sorry. No. We haven't finished yet. We look at the email. Well, there's not much email. I'm going to skim through it pretty quickly, I think. Basically, the first email was from Ken, who says, talks about the Mumble server and saying that John Neustadter had been providing the Mumble server, the one that we're using now, ch1.teamspeak.cc, but had decided to step away from doing this. He's spending money, his own money, to manage this, to keep this running. But Ken managed to negotiate that HPR would take over administration. So he was just flagging this up. And thanking John Neustadter for providing this facility that we've all used so much over the years. That was excellent news, I think. We struggled a little bit at the last recording of this to find a server, and Honky Magoo offered us his, which we used with great thanks. But it's nice to be back where we should be. So there was a comment to that from Joshua Burton, Low Tech, who said thank you, John, to John Neustetter, and basically saying he's used the mobile server as well. And you then replied to that. I'm having difficulty opening properly. And you said, does this mean the mumble server is back on? What is the process? Do you remember that, John?
Sure. I mean, the mumble server, I changed it. I just did the edit, and I put the one in for that you sent me. You sent me the new server link. The only thing was I got a certificate error when I connected.
Yeah, we all do that. We all do that. If you, I'm not quite sure. I think if it's been rebooted or restarted or reconfigured, then it will end up with a different. It'll end up with a different certificate, or won't have stored your certificate or something. Sorry, I just got alarms going off here. Switch them off quickly. So we're running a bit long here, so we're nearly finished though. So yeah, so you were good. You got that. We got that one sorted out.
It's an hour and 37 minutes so far. It's an hour and 37 minutes, really.
We have Ken then saying that he'd nominated HPR for the 12th Annual Podcast Awards. If you go and check that out, the time for voting is coming very soon. Then there was a comment I've been here all the time.
Okay. It's going to be fun. Hour and 38 minutes.
Yes, so, I know. Yeah. I heard you say that before, and then you just
yeah. Okay.
So just two more things to say. We had an upgrade to the HPR server, which might mean that the Hobby Public Radio has gone away, and that's why things are going funny. I don't know. Need to check that. Ken flagged this up. The problems that we were having have now gone. Then, ignoring my community news call, there's the discussion on the next ham radio roundtable has started up, and there's some talk about a date and a time for doing it, and people are gathering around to get together to do that very thing. So that would be very good. So I think that's all I have to say on that subject. So I think that means we're done. So you will be relieved, and so will everybody else, I'm sure. So have you anything you need to say, John?
I really enjoyed it. I wrote Ken a pretty detailed email about a podcast that I was thinking about making. It'll be a long one, extremely technical one, and I wasn't exactly sure how to present it. So I hope he gets back to me in the email format and lets me know what he thinks, because it's about RAID and XE4 okay. And how that works and stuff.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Anyway, Dave. Next month I'm not here, so Ken will have to be here because I'll be in the States next month.
Have a good one. Good trip.
But I should get you the first week in August. Cook up in the first week of August, and I'll see if I can get my plane ticket to Aucamp.
Yeah. I'm afraid I'm not going to be there, but hope you have a good one.
Okay. All right. Well, that's great. I'll see you next time, Dave.
Thanks for your help then, John.
Bye-bye.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.